Whether you're married or dating or wanting to date or wanting to be married or whatever, doesn't matter. Wanted to kind of just take a look at what I consider to be one of the, like, potentially heaviest relationships, I guess, you know, romantic relationship. It can be, on one side, it can be like the greatest thing in the world, where you feel the most safe and at home with this person. They know you better than anybody. On the other, there's all this risk, like what Dr. Paulson was talking about, just all this risk for rejection or pain and just misunderstanding. And so it's a very charged environment, the romantic relationship. And so we just thought it would be a good thing to talk about. So I don't have a female counterpart at the moment. My wife is doing the addiction one, so I'm just going to take my word for it. Everything I say is true. Anyway, it's kind of hard to follow up Stephen Paulson because I really feel like he, I mean, it's not hard, I guess. It shouldn't be hard. He kind of stole a lot of what I was going to say, though, in the sense that he really laid the groundwork for what I think, in a universal sense, is the key to all of our relationships, and that is obviously grace. But he talked about it in such a way that he really laid out knowing yourself on some level, you know what I mean? Like the idea that that it's almost impossible to forgive somebody else, and I think is impossible to forgive somebody else unless you understand yourself and your need for forgiveness. And that's kind of what I want to... Hey, guys, come on in. Sorry. That's kind of where I wanted to go. Because I don't, you know, all of us, I think, are looking for, this is Matt Lugan, our wonderful sound man.
Sorry.
Thank you. Looking for kind of like the key to a good relationship or how to kind of navigate, you know, our romantic relationships. And, I mean, the key basically is to love each other unconditionally, as he said. And the problem with that is that we don't do that. You know, we all come into our relationships, like you were saying, Jeff, like we all come into it with our families, you know, and we come into it with our baggage. We come into it with our parents' example or lack thereof or our own expectations of what a healthy relationship should look like, you know what I mean, our faiths, whatever that looks like. And so we're not these wonderful, neutral beings that can kind of, hey, approach you and say, well, you're just a great person. I love you, and I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to be there for you all the time. We all enter in with some sort of preconceived notion of what we want, or, you know what I mean, what we think we want, or what we need. And I think that romantic relationships are some of the best in breaking those things down, like, very quickly. No problem. As soon as you start to go down that path of, like, real intimacy, of trying to be vulnerable with somebody and to know them and have them know you, it's scary because there is this potential for them to reject you. And the reality is they probably will on some level. I mean, like, we are going to hurt one another, and we all do hurt one another on some level, like Stephen Paulson was saying. And I think what we hope for is that there is, as he was saying, there's space for forgiveness, some sort of space for acknowledging kind of the flaws that are going to happen. You know what I mean? So I guess the first thing I want to say is that we are coming in with our eyes open. The way to go into a relationship is to go in with your eyes open, knowing a bit more about yourself. And I think in our romantic relationships, they help us open our eyes in a way. But knowing that you are unable to love this person in the way that they probably are looking for you to love them, I think is a very, it's a sobering reality. And also knowing that they're not going to be able to love you the perfect way that you want them to love you is very sobering. And part of the thing that I think the reason why we all have that is because there's this idea in the world's view of what love is, or relationships, or basically just what how people are, and the concept of what he was talking about, you know, the free will versus the bound will type thing. I think the world tells us, and we see it on TV all the time, and we see it in, like, you know, the reality TV and all the whatever, magazines, everything like that, is this concept that people are on some level basically good and you just need some help to get better, or there's all this room for improvement. And I think that fosters this idea that when we go into a relationship, we think, you know, we're expecting some sort of change, either by them or by us. And that expectation is just the definition of conditionality. I mean, it means that the relationship on some level, that it's compromised. Every relationship starts that way. I mean, it's knee-jerk reaction. We actually cannot approach each other in a different manner. And so that concept of conditionality, the world backs up, you know, saying like, oh, I mean, so often we think that we can, you know, smooth out his rough edges, or, you know, help her, I don't know, brush her teeth more or something. But the truth is that that's probably not going to change, or at least it's not going to change because you're changing them. You know what I mean? And it's also the same is true, I think, of ourselves. And I'm going to tell a couple stories. One is about my wife, Kate, and me before we got married. She had an eating disorder when we met each other in high school. She was anorexic. And so we've kind of gone through all this, you know, healing and things like that throughout our relationship. But one of the things, when I actually went and proposed to her finally, she was really thrown. And she was upset, actually, because she, not because I proposed, but she was upset because she wasn't any different. She wanted to have changed and kind of gotten herself together for that moment. She didn't want to be as vulnerable as she was. She didn't want to be the broken person that she actually knew she was with me. You know, she wanted to be healthy and great, and obviously all these good things that we all want, you know, to be able to not have to cause suffering in our marriage, in our relationship, and everything like that, and obviously for herself too. But the fact of the matter was is that she, for all of her effort and everything like that, she still had all these problems, and she still did want to get married to me, which is great. She said yes. But that was something that she helped me with, just, you know, as an illustration for this, was just that so often, you know, I think we hear it like the desire to change the other person, and that always happens. But there is this reality of not being able to change yourself. Because I think if you're being close to somebody begins to expose to you the truth about yourself. Like, I mean, you learn how selfish you are when you've got somebody who's like living in your house and just looks to you for the simplest of things, you know, and they're actually the person that, in theory, you're supposed to love more than anybody else. And you find yourself just getting annoyed when they're like, can you just give me some more water? Or, you know, like, I want to snuggle before we go to bed or whatever, and that type of thing. And it's just like, gosh, leave me alone. And like, that's the response. And it's terrifying on one level, you know, because it's just like, man, this is the person I want to spend the rest of my life with, or whatever the situation the relationship is, but it's definitely the person I want to be close to, and I'm just doing nothing but pushing them away. And I think that that's something that she's really taught me about coming to grips with herself in the context of us. And how she, I mean, I've been really blessed to have her, because she has really... trying to think of how I want to say it. She, because of her desire to be with me, even despite her own problems, you know, it made me feel like really valued by her, but it also was something that was really cool. I didn't think that I actually could love her in that way, in a sense, you know, but she really felt accepted to the point where she was willing to risk it, you know what I mean? And so anyway, I'm kind of turning myself around here. But basically, the only thing that really broke the chain, the fear in her about getting married despite her real issues, was that she knew that it wasn't, I mean, ultimately it was not going to be up to her to change for me, and she knew that I wasn't going to be able to change her either. And it was really up to her and God. You know what I mean? That's what Stephen Paulson was talking about. It's what Justin Holcomb talked about last night, was the idea that we have to be reconciled to God first in order to be reconciled to each other. Because if you don't understand how much you've been forgiven, if you still think that there are these conditions, like Stephen Paulson was saying, if you still think that there is this law in your conscience that's telling you that you should have done this, should have done that, this, that, and the other, and you don't hear the grace from him that says, I accept you just as you are, then it's going to be impossible for you to actually extend some sort of grace to somebody else, to actually be compassionate to them when they're in trouble. You know, when she does something that annoys me, or vice versa, the knowledge that I am annoying is the thing that allows me to extend some sort of compassion to her, that I'm accepted and accepted by God because of my, in light of my sin and everything like that. That inspires compassion to love the other. And so, basically, the grace comes out of the grace that you've received. And one of the passages that I wanted to talk about was when Jesus is in, it's in Luke 7, 47 through 48. He's, I forget exactly where he's, Chris. I don't have it written down. He was dining with like the Pharisees or something, or maybe the disciples. And the prostitute comes and washes his feet with her hair and her tears. And they're all incensed, you know. And Jesus says, you know, he says, he who's forgiven little loves little, but she has been, her sins were many and she has loved much. And the implication is because she's been forgiven for her sins, she's been able to love exponentially, like with her own tears and hair. She has washed my feet. So this is the lunch, guys, so don't worry about that. And so that concept, though, that what Dr. Paulson was talking about, too, is that forgiveness, when you understand the forgiveness that is offered to you through Christ, and you understand that you are fully accepted and known as to who you truly are, it actually relieves some of the pressure from having to get that, having to find that in someone else, a human that cannot offer it, you know, but it also gives you the freedom to accept them because you understand your own faults. And okay, let me get through that. The other, I want to read another story. This one is by RJ. I don't know if all of you have this, but there's only like 9 left. So we're going to have another edition, but Judgment and Love. This is last year's book. RJ Heyman wrote a story in here about he and his wife. And I think it's very appropriate. Find it. So I'm just kind of talking, and then I want to hear your guys' questions and like that, but I'm just going to read this first, and then we can just talk. He wrote, the passage that he put in here was, we love because he's first loved us, and so this is RJ's account. A few weeks ago, I was in the kitchen with my wife, and it had just happened again. For the umpteenth time in our 9-year marriage, she had told me how something was going to turn out. I hadn't believed her, and of course, she had been right. Again, I'm sorry, she had been right. Again, what exactly it was that she was right about is beside the point. I can't remember it anyway. What mattered was that once again, in spite of her long track record of level-headed, accurate prognoses, I had, in my foolish pride, doubted my wife, and once again, she had been 100% correct. Humbled and frustrated with myself, I took a deep breath and sighed it out. I turned to her and asked, am I ever going to believe you? She looked at me with love and a bit of mischief in her eyes and said, very matter-of-factly, no. This may not seem like an important marital event, but it is a moment I will remember forever. In her simple yet profound one-word response, Jamie let me know that in spite of myself, she loved me and she always will. While she uttered only a single word, her delivery spoke volumes. What Jamie was really telling me in that instant was that she accepted me as I was, loved me in spite of my arrogance and lack of trust, and had come to terms with the fact that I would probably never change, and wanted to be with me anyway. If that is not godlike love, I don't know what is. It broke my heart and set ablaze all at the same time. Sorry. With one word, Jamie's love crushed my pride and self-loathing. It put me in my place and raised me up. A friend once told me that the best marriage preparation he had ever learned came from a speaker who, as the first order of business, looked into the audience and asked the question, "How would you feel if 95% of your spouse-to-be never changed?" For a troubling moment, the room full of people preparing to make vows of eternal love for one another all recognized that they'd secretly hoped to mold their partner into what they desired. In fact, relationships do not require people to be flexible, to change and grow. What people need is unconditional acceptance and love, the kind of love that says, even if you never get any better, I will still love you. Only this kind of one-way love can become the inspiration for change. This is true in all relationships. Although I could have never predicted it, my father only began to be the father I always wanted. Sorry, I don't need to read that. My wife would have been completely justified to be angry with me for my lack of belief in her, but that would have only created greater defensiveness on my part. I wish this were not the case, but it is. Yet by some miracle, Jamie withheld righteous anger and judgment and offered something unexpected and undeserved in their place, which changed me. So that's RJ's take on the same concept. So that's kind of what I want to say. I mean, the reality is that there's tons of things you could talk about with romantic relationships, and there's tons of little things that are going to come up and little issues that you'll have to face with whoever you're intimate with, because you're always, you know, uncovering new parts of yourself, and they're right there to see it every time. And but I think the main principle, though, that I wanted just to get out was that real love is something that doesn't expect. You know what I mean? On some level, it doesn't have an expectation. It doesn't desire anything other than what's right in front of you. And the truth is, as far as we're concerned, that's what you're getting. You know, the person that you're going to be with is the person you're going to be with. And the only hope we have of them ever changing is that God is going to do it, you know? But the truth is if that's what your hope is going into the relationship, then there's probably, you know, some pause there, because they're obviously upsetting you on some level. I don't know. But I think that the main issue is that God's love for us is the thing that inspires us to love one another. His forgiveness for us is the thing that enables us to forgive one another. And it allows us to seriously cover over a multitude of sins. And that's been true in my life with Kate. We've been married 7 years. And it's not easy. But it is true. I mean, I had a serious breakdown 3 years ago when we first moved to New York. Like, I seriously fell apart. I had, like, a nervous breakdown. And had, like, panic attacks and all these things. And I was terrified and ashamed of being that weak. You know what I mean? Like, I came from a household with a typical dad, you know, leader of the house and things. And the reality was that I completely failed on some level to take care of my wife in those days. And I had completely failed as a man, I felt, you know. But she just went through it with me. I mean, there was no question. And she loved me through the entire thing and accepted me and stood by me. And she had to accept, because there was a scary time where I actually was going to counseling and things like that, and I was on medication, and there was this real fear that I may never be the same, that Sean may not be the same. He might be this kind of unstable the rest of his life. And Kate, you know, we talked about that, and it was horrifying for me, because I was like, is she going to, like, leave? And she didn't. I mean, she said, I don't care. I want you, and I want to stay with you. And that actually it's not just words. It's true. It actually does inspire you to love that person even more. The fact that she was so, I mean, you know, selfless in that moment just has really impacted me, and it's made me love her all the more. And that was after 4 years of marriage. So, anyway, so I've said a lot, and I would love to hear if, you know, any questions or thoughts or objections or anything like that. Paul, how's it going?
Yeah. Okay. I think that last year I was like, so inspired by this, like, deep understanding of that complete acceptance in romantic relationships. But I went home and I think had the perspective that I was just supposed to accept whatever they did, no matter what they did, I was supposed to accept it, give grace, live in that place, love. And that's true. But I think in some way it was to the detriment of the honesty of, like, calling a thing what it is.
Right.
I'm just interested to hear everyone's perspective on how to be honest and call a thing what it is so that grace can be real sin. It's not just grace in relation to a general relationship, but it's actually grace in relation to those parts that are twisted.
Yeah, I think that's good. Kate and I have actually had a lot of conversations about that exact thing because we both kind of come from codependent relationships, and there's with our families, and there's definitely a desire to want to kind of just go into denial in a way that isn't helpful. I mean, I guess you know, it's a way for me to be passive aggressive if I'm just kind of like, oh, I'm totally forgiving her all the time, and in my mind I'm just like, you know, I'm gonna lay this out on her at some point, you know, or whatever. Like, there's I mean, it's this, I think that we can use the term grace in a way to just continue to walk in dysfunction, I guess, and not relate. And I think that the powerful thing about the true love that we know we've been given and that unconditional acceptance from God is that there's, like Stephen Paulson said, there's no more fear of that retribution, and it actually brings about honesty. I think that knowing the forgiveness that you've been given from God and knowing that there is no more law, as Dr. Paulson was saying, over you and sitting in your conscience waiting to kind of, you know, say, you should have, that enables an environment where you actually can just be yourself. And you don't have to pretend to be something for her or for him that you're not. And because it's true, I think that that's something that will eat away at a relationship when you're faking it. And I don't think that's why we get into them in the first place. I did anyway. I got into my relationship with Kate because I wanted to not pretend. I wanted to be known for who I actually was. And does anybody else have thoughts on that? I mean, because it's true. I think honesty, it's never at the expense of honesty, I mean, in my opinion.
But, so what Dr. Paulson said this morning about patience. About 5 years into my marriage with my wife, I had not a breakdown, but I had a life-changing experience. I lost my job. I was forced out of our CPA partnership. It was, to borrow a term Paul used in last year's conference, it was a puree. I mean, it was completely broken down. And grace shined a spotlight through me. And I realized I've not been a good husband. And I looked at my wife and I said, I honestly don't know, why are you still here? And she just said, because I love you. And at that moment, we were in our bedroom. I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning. And at that moment, our marriage changed. But had she not been patient with me for those 4 or 5 years before that, that would have never happened. You know, in a lot of ways, a marriage, it gives you little peepholes into what grace really is. I thank God every day for those 4 or 5 years of patience.
I'm not convinced there's really anything other than self-discovery in issues like this.
Right.
I mean, like, we want to think, and, like, we talk to people and say, no, I really needed someone to tell me that I was being an asshole. Like, I just have no experience of ever really wanting to hear that from other people, especially someone I love. And the response is never, oh, thank you, I received that. Thank you so much. I mean, that might be the words, but we just hate the other person. This is my experience. And what I found is thinking about, like, the statement that was, I think, RJ made in the marriage conference, how would you feel if 95% of your spouse never changed? The way I hear it is, how would you feel if the 5% that you want to be changed never changes.
Right.
Because the truth is 95% of your spouse is going to change over the course of your lifetime together. Yeah. It's just never going to be what you want to change. And because the things you want to change you're focused so much on, God can't do anything with it. Because you're holding on so tight.
Hmm.
And it's when we let go, and what changes is all this other stuff that we didn't even realize was wrong with us.
Right.
That God can work on because we're so focused on something else. And so the moment we start, you know, calling it the truth and love or whatever it is, you know, bringing it out, you know, calling it what it is, calling it a spade, just brings our focus back around. And this is just in my experience. I don't know. It just brings our focus back around to this one thing that we just get more and more frustrated that it's not changing. That we've been dealing with this for years and years and years, and it's not going away, and mm-hmm. it's just here, and it's just driving a wedge between me and this other person.
Right.
And I've just never felt more deflated. And I'm not married, but I've had some pretty rough ends to relationships in my course. And every time, it's because in the end, I've felt unloved. Mm-hmm. And it's not unloved in 95-99% of the relationship. It's unloved in this one part that I already hate myself for.
Yeah.
And then there's the one part of my life that I need to be loved by them in. And when that's not possible, when that's just the one thing that always gets on her nerves, always gets on her last nerve, I do not feel love in any other part of the relationship.
Right.
And that's probably my brokenness. That's probably my mess. But it's always for me the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Mm-hmm.
And the freedom is in being loved. The thing that struck me so much in just thinking more about this, and that I talked to Stephen Paulson after the conversation, is that the idea of being able to forgive because we've been forgiven first is I realized that until we accept the forgiveness that God offers us, which is mm-hmm. complete and total,
mm-hmm.
every relationship we go into, forgiveness is just another tool we're going to use to elicit the forgiveness we need.
Right.
It's always a tit for tat. We're always looking for that forgiveness from that other person, so we lord our forgiveness over them.
Yeah.
And it's not until we can be fully accept the forgiveness of God and let go of all that stuff, let go of our neediness. And that's what impacted me so much about your book, Paul, is the idea that a romantic relationship is the end to neediness.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
The end to neediness. Like, we can't need something from the other person. It has to come from God.
That's right.
That other person cannot give us what we need.
Right.
Because we are a bottomless well.
Right.
That's
true. And it sets you free then to actually experience love with another person, because the neediness, you know, is a taking thing, and it's not a loving thing. You know what I mean? Love is something that comes
100% giving.
Right. Love is something that comes out of you, and I think that's true. What you said, yeah, that's great. I was thinking, I mean, on the honesty thing, I think that there is sometimes a fear. I guess the thing that I was thinking of, in total agreement with Chris, is that kind of what Kate was going through before we got married, this idea that she couldn't be Kate on some level. She had to kind of suppress something about herself to make her acceptable to me. And that's not love. And that's actually lying, like what you're saying. And if so I think that's, it's like the woman at the well when Jesus says, you know, go get your husband. And she said, I don't have a husband. And then she goes off and says, he told me everything I ever did. That the gospel actually is complete honesty about who you are as a person. That's what, yeah, and I think that's so good. Like, when you're aware of who you are in light of the cross and what God has done for you, there is complete honesty. And then it actually sets you free when you're accepted in that to be that person in front of other people. And I think that there, you do have that rare chance to be able to do that with people on this earth, and it's wonderful, but it's only in light of what you were saying, yeah, only in light of the cross. Because otherwise there's no form of human relationship that outside of, you know, the cross or the knowledge of it or anything like that, that can actually be free to really be unconditional. It's just going to be conditional, I mean, because we are that way. And but if the love breaks in, the love from outside, like Stephen Paulson was saying, breaks in, then it truly breaks in and it starts steamrolling, because love just inspires more love. You know, it just, and just like judgment and condemnation inspires defensiveness and reaction.
That's huge.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was just saying, it was just going off of what Chris was saying, that all forms of human relationship will be conditional without the cross first breaking into each one of those person's lives. And that's a very hard thing, especially if, you know, one person is in one spot and one is another. I mean, my dad was not a Christian both of my parents were not Christians when they got married, and my mom became a Christian first, and she has no clue why my dad stayed with her at all, because she was kind of crazy and sewed Jesus on her sleeves and things like that. But she was like one of the Jesus freaks. Anyway, it was a terrifying time, though, they both kind of talk about, because they were completely apart in a way. And it was literally like the grace of God that my dad became a Christian. But the point I'm trying to make is that because he broke in into their individual lives, that changed their marriage to actually be something new, and they were able to get through a lot of years of difficulty. But so yeah, I mean, I'm just going with what Chris is saying. So.
I think there are plenty of examples of like a dishonest type of grace. Like, grace, is that what you're saying? Like almost every family, I feel like, a lot of times families are complimented, or the family institution is complimented as being like the place where you can be yourself. But all that really means is like everybody's so tired of trying to change you that you just are yourself, and that's what makes families so terrible. <It's>, like, that's why, like, when you go sit with somebody's family, or, you know, you're able to, if you're ever able to sort of get on the inside of someone else's family, you see how nasty they always are to each other. Or not always, but in a lot of families. And it's sort of that kind of being yourself that
right.
is not even freeing to you. You know, sort of, you all remain in your chains and you're fighting. Because there is no honesty, because you're just sort of tired of the judgment. There's really no grace either.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Sean, do you mind if I ask you a question about
Please.
Marriage? Because maybe I should have gone to the Grace and Addiction workshop, but my sister's anorexic.
Mm-hmm.
She's 32 years old, and throughout her adult life, every romantic relationship she's had,
right.
she's thrown a grenade into it
yeah.
and destroyed it.
Right.
And just wondering if you have any insight to that, I might be able to help her with as to why she does that. And you were talking about faith and how
yeah.
she felt when you proposed.
Well, the nice thing is that's going to be recorded, so you can hear his too. But I mean, part of that, it has to do with just the own self-hatred. And at least from Kate's point of view, I mean, it's stuff that from families of origin and things like that, where you are coming from, you bring all this baggage into the relationship. And and if you haven't dealt with it on some level with the original relationships that kind of it all started with, then it's going to be, on some level, it's going to be impossible to really reconcile with this new person, because there's something in you that is still very unhealed, I guess. Or, you know, I mean, with Kate, she always described it as, I mean, because she always said, you know, anorexia or any kind of eating disorder like that is just like a slow suicide. And it's this example of hatred and self-hatred and pain and all these things that you just don't know how to deal with. And so a lot of times in that context, when you start to get close with somebody, the only option, except for being completely exposed with all that pain inside of you, like all these dark places, is self-sabotage. You just sabotage the relationship, because otherwise they're actually going to see those things that you don't even want to visit yourself, and you kind of bury in your food problems. And so that's been something that we've had to work through. I mean, I don't have an eating disorder, but I come from a family full of problems like that. And we both had to go into counseling at different times, and we've gone into counseling together, which I can't ever like downplay, in my opinion, the help of getting an objective third party that's not family. If you know, anytime there's any kind of trouble or difficulty in a relationship, is just invaluable, I think, to go into counseling if you need to, and to not be afraid of it, which I was for a while, because my family never did that. You know, I was like, that's not cool. But because of Kate's willingness to do it, we did go into counseling together. But it really uncovers, like you were saying, Lisa, just like the stuff that you brought into this relationship because of your own, the problems with your dad or whatever, and the things that you've never actually dealt with. And so that's the thing. When I don't want you guys to think that what I'm saying here is like, get yourself figured out, then you can have a meaningful relationship with somebody. That's not what I mean to say. What I'm really saying is that because I think that so much of what an intimate relationship does is does expose those things, and it's in that context that you then start to visit those things, and hopefully it's one that there's love in there, and that allows, like you said, for the patience. I mean, that's amazing, right? Somebody would be patient with you for 4 years. I mean, like that type of thing. And then you actually start to work through these issues. But I guess what I'm really saying is, don't be surprised that they're screwed up and you're screwed up, and it's like not up to you to fix it on some level, that God is going to break in and actually uses the both of you to break into each other. You know what I mean? And exposes those problems. And I think that that's something that it's the death and resurrection thing. He breaks in, it's pain. But then when you visit that together and you're able to go and talk with somebody about it or whatever, there can be a lot of healing, and a new chapter in your relationship can be turned, like you were saying about your losing your job or something. And but the families of origin thing is big. We both had to go in and differentiate, which is the therapy term, with our families of origin. That's why I call it that now, because I've learned, it's my family. My family is Kate. And then there's my family of origin. And that was a hard thing, because when you start out getting married, like, first things that come up, I think, anyway, are the fact that you're still really attached to that other group. And this is this new person that doesn't do things the same way as your family always did or whatever. And you guys don't agree on it. And so, like, there is a real, the issue is forced, and you start to see kind of what, how it really is important to begin to make this relationship the primary one. But that's only something that comes with, like you said, an immense amount of patience and help, I think. But at the core, an understanding of, that there is real grace unconditionally offered from the outside for you personally, and it does remove then, like Chris was saying, this need, a neediness, and so.
Would you say on some level it's like a self-acceptance?
Yeah, I would.
That's what I'm kind of like,
yeah.
In my mind. I like the idea that you're talking about being known by another person and how important that is. But that if we can't accept ourselves and we can't be comfortable with knowing ourselves, then we don't want to be known by someone else.
Right, and that's what I think goes back to what you were saying, that with the example of an eating disorder. If you don't want to deal with that yourself, you're not going to like it when somebody else starts to look into that area of your life. And there's always going to be new areas. That's the thing that's scary, man. But it is amazing, too, like, just kind of like how a new thing comes up all the time where you're just like, man, like, I didn't know how scared I was to share that with her. And at the same, but then I feel like God usually brings those things out. You kind of don't really have a choice most of the time. But, so yeah, I mean, like Stephen Paulson said, the forgiveness is the key to all those things. I think. Kelly, sorry.
To maybe ask a slightly more pointed question.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that has, well, the very nature of engagement is joining two formerly independent beings into one. I think I can. I don't think I'm revealing anything that's like terribly secret to say that independent streak that is sort of the nature of. Well, I mean, we're also two eldest children, and there are a number of people that would say that was a terribly stupid idea in the first place. So where does grace, or what does grace have to say within that dynamic, into that dynamic of making decisions that need to be made? Because you're sort of, I mean, because this is like confronted with, you have to, like, we have to earn an income next year, one way or the other. Like, one way or the other, and it comes in various forms. I mean, and decisions have to be made about that. And our particularities are of no real particular consequence. But where does grace enter into that, the sort of the very mundane day-to-day, not simply of knowing each other, because I think we sort of know enough to know that we're both fiercely independent and that I'm a gigantic ass. And so knowing all of that, like, where do you go when the boots hit the ground? Am I articulating myself?
When you have to make tough decisions, life decisions type thing. I mean, it depends on, with the independent thing, there has to be, in my opinion, there has to be some sort of togetherness on the decision. You know what I mean? Like, when you're talking about it, I think that it's going to be different with each couple because it's going to manifest in different ways. But I think that when we've had to make really tough decisions, I mean, it's basically been us sitting down and just saying everything that we think about the subject, and then hopefully praying about it, not all the time. but trying to be as upfront with one another as we can be, and then basically remembering that we're a united front. You know what I mean? Like, that, because it's true, you are bringing two individuals into a relationship, but it's like you said, they're becoming one on some level, and that changes things. It's not just you making the calls anymore. And if you do, I mean, like that, and the plain truth is too, is that you're still going to do it on some level. Like, you're going to make decisions like you always did, and she's going to get ticked, and you're going to have to face that with each other. You know what I mean? And it's like, because I do that with Kay, like, you know, it's, you sit there and you just make the decision to whatever, buy a TV, and like, which I didn't do. But anyway, like those types of things, and then you have to sort it out with each other, and you kind of learn by mistakes in a lot of ways, you know what I mean? But I do think that the really big life decisions, I think that's a different, it's partly a different discussion, because I think that on some level there is a passivity involved in life in general that, like, whether or not you think it's up to you and your decision and how that's going to direct the rest of your life and how much control you have over your own life is kind of a different issue, but it is also something that will inform how you relate to your significant other in light of those decisions. I think having some sort of acceptance of your inability to see through it and inability to make the right decision, but to just know that on some level you're being taken care of and held by God, hopefully, and that that is our hope, and his promise to us that will relieve some of the pressure between the two of you. You know what I mean? To, like, make the right call. Because we make big decisions all the time, and I second guess them the instant we make them, you know, and that's just kind of the way it goes until we're a year down the road and we look back and we're like, oh, that worked out, it was fine. But, so I guess that's where I'd go on that one. But, Peter, I mean, I'm not, I don't know, I'm just kind of telling you my thoughts too, so you can take them or leave them. No.
Some of us do premarital counseling, and others of us will do premarital counseling. By the time you get a couple in the office and they're thinking of marriage, you know, they're looking at life with rose-colored glasses, and you try to get them to sort of admit some problem or some difficulty in your relationship. And by that time, there are no problems.
Right.
Of course, you know there are, but by that time, they're in love and you can't really get to that level. As you think back to your premarital situation.
Yeah.
Are there things that you wish that had been explored or been forced to explore? Every once in a while, I have spotted an issue with a couple and really kind of gone at it and said, no, this is going to be a real problem for you. But most of the time, you just don't ever get there.
Right.
And I'm just thinking, as people think ahead to marriage, how much do you probe and try to zero in on problems that you think might be there?
Right.
And how do you help people face the fact that they're going to discover things about one another that are huge down the line? You feel like they're just not yet willing to look at those.
Yeah, I mean, when I think back on our premarital stuff, I mean, we had to take these tests and things. I don't know if you guys did any of this or anybody who's going to get married or whatever. We had to take these, like, IQ test type thingies and, you know, examining our expectations, and the point of them was, on some level, was not to necessarily say, like, this is your expectation, like, that's stupid. It was more to say, like, you have expectations. You have things that you think this marriage is going to be, and the plain truth is that you do not know what it's going to be like. And the real thing was just to uncover them on some level so that you're not so surprised when they come up, because they will. And I think what you say, Peter, is true, and I think it's really, really difficult, if not impossible, to get someone to want to go there. You know what I mean? If they don't want to go there and they don't want to deal with it right then, it's going to be really hard for them to do it. I mean, and I don't think, I mean, I think the best thing to do if you're going to be doing premarital counseling and that type of thing, I think, is to always keep the door open, you know, in the sense of with that relationship. I know Jake has shared this stuff with me because he's been doing a lot of it here, is that he's seen couples come in and they do have some obvious issues. And the thing he always tries to do is, one, at least just share the gospel with them and tell them about God's grace for them and their forgiveness for them. And at the same time, if they're not willing to face it, really just try to be an open door for them, somebody that they will want to come back to when the problems arise. Because I've known a couple other pastors, too, that have taken another bent and have said, I won't marry you. And they've never heard from that couple again. They went, you know, they went and got married in some other church. And so then they don't have a voice into their life ever again. And they will still have to deal with that problem sometime down the road, but they'll probably not go to the church because of that guy. And so I think it's a difficult thing. I do think it's helpful, though, to just be as, to offer the opportunity to, by providing a safe place, to look at yourself and look at your expectations and acknowledge that they're there. And hopefully in that context, you'll start to see, like, wow, maybe I shouldn't be expecting her to bear like 13 children or whatever, you know. I mean, although it's happening all the time these days, but so I mean, like, I hear you. I mean, I think, I mean, what do you think to that? You've got way more experience than I do.
What's the worst thing you can imagine discovering about your partner?
Mm-hmm.
And would you have enough knowledge of the grace of God in your life to be able to forgive for that? So that there are no surprises. I mean, there are going to be surprises, but I think if you start thinking, well, what's the worst thing I can think about?
Yeah, it's good.
About the person, and then you discover that about them.
That's right.
You can forgive.
Right.
Because you've been forgiven.
Right.
Then it's different. I think that we tiptoe around the problems when we do premarital counseling, or when we're talking to a couple who are just an age or something. things that you later discover.
That's right.
That you need to then deal with. I don't know, I think that might be helpful, but it's probably not then that you need to deal with these things. It's before people get engaged, so before they get into people in that relationship, you need to start thinking about these things, because once that happens, juices take over, and now you're involved in something so much bigger than yourself that you can't look honestly as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Can I just to speak to that, something that's really helped, we've been talking with Paul Walker, who, I mean, it helps that Paul and Christy know us better than almost anyone, but the way Paul has really gotten us to talk about some difficult stuff that we didn't even realize was there was through asking us a lot of questions about our families or these families of origins.
Yeah. you don't have to use it. That's what I was
saying. But that's been very helpful just because it exposed expectations that we didn't know we had just because, well, our family does this, my family does this, your family does this. Mm-hmm. And I think in our culture, it's a lot more acceptable to have problems with one's family than to have problems with the person that they're involved in, be it engaged, married, dating. And so that was very, very helpful. And it's been difficult, but it's been very, very helpful in helping us figure things out over the last 3 or 4 months. So not saying we have all the answers, but it's been helpful.
Yeah.
And it's also helpful, like, a combination.
I kind of, we did do counseling, I kind of wonder if we had done counseling, if we would have gotten married in the first place, and it would have been a shame.
Yeah. Well,
we didn't do Rorschach for couples or anything.
Right.
So, it was kind of funny though, we were married in the Pentecostal church, and the only counseling I got was the pastor of my wife's church sat down with me before the wedding, and she said, I've been praying about it, and I just really feel as part of Carrie's vows, she needs to say obey. And put that in on her. And for like the first 6 months of our marriage, anytime she'd get angry with me, she'd say, "You didn't tell me he was going to do that." And I get that too. She always brought it up.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll make sure Paul doesn't say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
She actually choked on it when she said
it. Sounds to me like you need to print those up and just keep pointing to them.
Well, that's about the time, guys. I mean, if I'm obviously around. I mean, while you're here, if you want to keep talking, I'm around. Peter's around. Paul Zoll's around. Jacob's around. These are all guys, and Paul Walker, they're all guys who are ordained and have experience with counseling and marital counseling, relationship counseling, all those things. So if you want to talk to any of them, I'm sure they'd be willing to do it.